cél a támadó helikopter egy óránál.
Cél megvan!
Yep, that's me. And if you're wondering how I ended up behind a quad 20mm cannon installation on the Danube, scaring the living daylights out of a bunch of very surprised motorists on a nearby bridge, well, listen on, because I have quite the tale to tell you. You see, just over a year ago, I was a guest aboard one of these vessels. Well, the one that's closest to you, in fact. These are some of the vessels available to what's informally known as the Hungarian Danube River Flotilla, which has a history that parallels the very end of the Austro-Hungarian Danube River fleet, and which continued through the 20th century. So today, we're going to take a look at some of the history of the flotilla, with the assistance of some scale models, which were provided in an exhibition by the Hungarian Society for Maritime History, Modelling and Tradition. And then after that, we're going to speak to some of the officers and men who are part of the flotilla today. And there'll be a follow-up video coming in the next month or so, where we're going to look at some exercises that we conducted while we were out on the Danube, including the one that led into this video. So our story actually begins at the end of the 19th century, far away from Budapest, way down southeast of what is today Hungary, on the borders of what is, again, nowadays, Serbia and Romania, in a place called the Iron Gate, or Vaskapu, I think that's how it's pronounced in Hungarian. Now, this area is known for essentially being the whitewater rapids of the Danube. Above them, the Danube is perfectly navigable. Below them, the Danube is perfectly navigable. But in the Iron Gates themselves, it's a lot more hazardous. The Danube cuts through some mountains, and that results in a narrowing of the river, but there's just as much water flowing through, so you end up with an awful lot of concealed rocks, an awful lot of currents, an awful lot of rapids, and all sorts of other things that are generally not conducive to the health of shipping. It's not completely unnavigable, but you do have to have a local guide, a lot of luck, and ideally a small, agile, and shallow draft vessel to successfully make it. This, of course, was something of a problem because the Danube flows down to the Black Sea, and there was potential for a great deal of trade coming up the Danube if only there was a way to bypass the Iron Gates. And so, towards the end of the 19th century, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, with the specific help of a Hungarian engineer and department, decided they were going to do something about this. And through the 1890s, a series of channels were cut, dug, or in some cases blasted with explosives, to provide a somewhat safer passage both for shipping in general and for larger ships in particular, although the sheer volume of water coming down the Danube meant that in some sections, if you wanted to head upriver and the current was particularly strong, you actually needed a steam locomotive or two running on rail tracks next to the channel to haul you against the current until you could get above stream of the Iron Gates. This, of course, meant that there was a dramatic increase in shipping on the Danube, especially shipping from overseas. And with the general increase in traffic came the need for more enforcement, monitoring, and protection of people on the rivers. Now, the Austro-Hungarian Empire already had a Danube River fleet made up of a series of monitors at this point, of which SMS Leitha is still around, and I believe the Bodrog is around up in Serbia. But reasonably sized, heavily armed monitors were not particularly swift and something of a sledgehammer if you wanted to conduct regular port inspections and patrols. And so a section of Budapest's police force was broken off, given water policing duties, and remodeled in the style of a railway inspectorate. The idea being that they could specialise in dealing with riverborne matters and leave the stuff ashore to the regular police force, much in the same way that London is covered by the Metropolitan Police Force generally, but there is also a London River Force, which is somewhat separate. Some of these duties were fairly mundane, making sure that people and goods in ports and river stations were secure, registering the incoming and outgoing shipping, especially because there was a lot more foreign shipping available now, ensuring that fishing regulations, health and safety, and protection of riverbanks was all maintained. And that would include things like enforcing the speed limit. But there were also more exciting and esoteric things, like preventing the unauthorized boarding of ships or boats. This meant, obviously, stowaways and unregistered passengers, but also preventing nefarious activities going on while ships were underway. But also, despite the fact that the Austro-Hungarian Empire is to the central and southern portion of Europe, and you might not otherwise expect it, it does get quite cold there in winter. And so they were also responsible for keeping an eye on the build-up of ice on the Danube, making sure that passage was clear for various ships coming to and from, and also stopping the occasional person who thought that jumping onto the ice and trying to cross over it was a good idea before they fell into the water and gave themselves hypothermia. This force persisted for about 2 decades, but then at the end of World War II, with the Austro-Hungarian Empire both on the losing side and in the middle of disintegration, there were quite a few major changes. Firstly, with the collapse of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Royal and Imperial Danube fleet was disbanded. Serbian forces occupied much of the downriver section of the Danube. There was a brief Soviet Republic of Hungary. A military offensive put paid to that, but also took away most of the remaining naval assets. And then the final settlement from the Versailles Conference meant that Hungary, which was now separated from Austria, was officially prohibited from maintaining a navy or armed river units, a much more severe restriction than that imposed on Germany. These stipulations were held under the Treaty of Trianon. The only armed forces allowed were law enforcement forces. But it didn't take very long for people to start to come up with ways around this restriction. In this particular case, the founding in 1921 of the Royal Hungarian River Guard was the measure taken. Technically speaking, this expanded the role of the river police, which had previously been restricted to Budapest and a few other key ports, to become a nationwide armed waterway law enforcement body. And its remit was expanded not just to include what the previous police unit had been responsible for, but also the maintenance of public order on or near the river, the direct prevention of smuggling and espionage, and a rather interesting open-ended clause which stated that the guard is also responsible for all other duties assigned by law or regulations which fall under the purview of the river police institution or may be assigned to it in the future. So, yes, this was essentially a merging of the old river fleet and the police river flotilla into a single organisation that was essentially military in nature, but for official purposes was not. But considering that it had officers, non-commissioned officers, command staff, enlisted, and was mostly operating older craft inherited directly from the Danube River fleet, the Allied Military Control Commission kept a very close eye on them for the first few years after the war. But as the 1920s wore on and the Allied commissions gradually went away, the River Guard slowly began to fit its ships out with more and more warlike material, including rapid landing parties of what you might otherwise call marines, as well as minesweeping equipment and mine-laying equipment. By 1938, Hungarian rearmament was well underway, and in a speech it was stated that it is necessary to transfer the River Guard to military jurisdiction so the military can independently perform water defence, bridge protection and shipping security. And so the River Guard re-emerged as a full military unit, with river law enforcement duties transferred to a separate unit, but which was still a military border guard. Their new role included defending the river shores and the transport routes along the Danube, conducting mine-laying and mine-clearing operations, assisting military crossings when the army wanted to get across the Danube or wanted to conduct a landing further downstream, providing anti-aircraft and heavy artillery cover along the river's route, as ships could carry these guns far more easily than men could haul them across land, or even vehicles for that matter. And with this artillery, they were to support infantry movements and amphibious operations, both army-led and with their own forces. New armoured craft were ordered to be constructed, and the force would spend World War II engaged in active operations. However, with German forces taking the lead in the Yugoslav campaign, the Hungarian River forces generally moved in behind them and were mostly involved with mine clearing, self-defence, and rescue operations in the aftermath of the German advance. Although they did come across the monitor Drava, which had been sunk by Ju-87 dive bombers, and which was formerly one of the Austro-Hungarian Danube Fleet's ships, so they set about salvaging it, although as it turned out, the poor thing couldn't be put back into service and ended up being scrapped. Patrols and clear-up duty after the campaign characterised much of the rest of World War II for the river units, but then in 1944 the Germans decided they were going to assume direct control, thus taking over much of the fleet. But with fuel shortages, there wasn't a huge amount they could do, apart from a few minesweeping efforts against aerial dropped mines and acting as floating anti-aircraft batteries to protect various bridges. Then in the last 6 months of the war, there was a period of short, sharp combat against both Red Army units, who were invading from the east, and in self-defence against US bombing efforts on the Upper Danube, but by the time the war was over, the majority of the river fleet had been sunk. In the aftermath of World War II, with river trade still very important, the department was rebuilt, renamed by presumably the Soviet Department for Redundancy Department to the State Police Harbour Police, which was then subsumed by the State Protection Authority of the Ministry of the Interior, which was in turn absorbed by the Ministry of the Interior State Protection Authority, who then decided to establish the Ministry of the Interior State Protection Authority Border Guard, who then took up the duties of policing the river again. This force was then split to oversee three major bodies of water within Hungary, the Danube, the Tiber, and Lake Balaton. Then, just as things were settling down in the 1950s, there was a game of pass the parcel, with the department transferred first to the Ministry of Transport and Post to Department of Maritime and Shipping Affairs, brackets Harbour Police Units, then transferred back to the Ministry of the Interior as River Police, then they became the National Police Harbour Police, and then finally in 1966 they decided to go back to having the three separate departments for the Danube, Tiber, and Lake Balaton, with the Danube section overseen from Budapest. But in keeping with most of its history, while officially a police force, as you probably guessed from the beginning, it still retains a much more military-style character to it, everything from the uniforms to the fact that, well, most police forces don't go around with quad 20mm cannon either. And that brings us to the present day, where I find myself on the river with these fine gentlemen. One of their additional duties since World War II has also been the recovery of a wide variety of munitions which fell into the Danube and failed to detonate, but which of course could pose a serious hazard to ongoing shipping. That's half archaeology, half bomb disposal though, because at the same time as they discover World War II German aerial mines or Soviet bombs or the occasional American one, they also have a habit of occasionally coming across Ottoman cannonballs from, you know, centuries and centuries ago when the Ottomans were contesting for control of the Danube. So now let's talk to some of the men who serve aboard these craft today, and you'll notice in some of the interviews they refer to the exercises that we'd just done at the time, but which of course, as I said, will be coming in more detail in a subsequent video. They of course all speak Hungarian, so I have had what they've said translated, and that will be dubbed over what they're saying so that the majority of the audience can understand. If you happen to be Hungarian and you want to hear the original Hungarian audio, please let me know and I can supply that.
Cool. Okay, so we've seen the three exercises, really, really good exercises. The first I've seen is a live exercise on a serving warship. So what exactly will we see?
First of all, we have seen three action stations or beat to quarters exercises. The first one was the air raid exercise. This is one of the most important action stations exercises, which the ship's crew has to know. The air defense guns are part of the ship's self-defense system. Therefore, it is very important that the crew can handle it in such a way that should any situation arise, that at any time they can make the ship ready to fire. This needs a lot of training, but in 1 or 2 years the crew can be forged together in such a way that they are capable of doing everything in the required amount of time. The next action stations exercise we have seen
was the man overboard action. This is also very important because obviously we have to be prepared for every situation which could happen during sailing. It can easily happen that one of our sailors falls into the water, or we may rescue a civilian. Therefore, it is important that we are ready to rescue them in time to lift them out safely before they get harmed. The next action station exercise was the fire drill. For this, we also need to be prepared because any situation arise on the ship, engine failure, if they catch fire, obviously we have to be ready to react to this situation. Regarding this, it is important to note that there are a lot of electrical equipment on the ship. We are not fighting the fire with pure water, but with a special foam. This is how we can prevent the possible spreading of the fire and to save those equipment being totally destroyed.
Okay, so we're at the bow of the ship. Roughly how old is this ship? When was it built?
Ez egy francia licencre készült jugoszláv hajó.
This ship was built in Yugoslavia under a French license. It was designed for minesweeping and mine laying. It was built in 82 in Belgrade. The Hungarian army put them into service in the 90s. On it, air defense guns can be found, which serves for the ship's self-defense against aircraft no faster than 300 meters per second. The gun is fitted with 20 millimeter ammunition in 60 round drum cartridges. The rate of fire is 650 to 700 rounds per minute. We can also guide fire on land targets. They are effective against lightly armored vehicles. The emplacement on the bow can be found on the bow deck. It's a four barrel one, the PAW-4. It has four Mark 55M air defense guns on it. On the deck above the engine room on the stern, there are two more single barrel air defense guns. Those are M71 type, but the weapon is the same, only the mounting is different. The ship is 72 tons, aluminium alloy, because they were built for mine sweeping in order the magnetic induction mine would not notice it. That is why it is built from aluminium. The outer skin is aluminium and magnesium alloy.
Because you steer the ship, how easy is the ship to handle compared to some of the others in the flotilla?
The ship is very maneuverable. What we need to know on river ships is that there are the kind that is very good at keeping course. The other kind is very good at maneuvering. It cannot be both at the same time. For example, with a civilian ship, we set the angle of the rudder, and it's more than capable of keeping course. This one, though, needs steering and correction all the time when underway, but the advantage here is that it's very maneuverable. So you can spin the ship around on the spot, and we can do traversing or sideways movements with it as well. For example, when casting off or tying up. So when we cast off and left the marina, it can be seen that we could nicely traverse out sideways, and then we could spin the ship around almost on one spot. So it is very good and maneuverable.
And how long, roughly, do soldiers serve aboard the flotilla? Is it a career in and of itself, or do you do this as one element of a career and then go to other postings?
If someone falls in love with it, it can be a lifelong career. So yes, if someone like this profession, they can do this lifelong, but there are people with us who only here for a short period or a few years, then they go elsewhere. But most of the men get to like it. This profession has its unique and particular beauty and pleasure.
So the primary mission of the flotilla is dealing with unexploded ordnance, but obviously there's the 20 millimeters for self-defense. Is there ever a call for the flotilla to act as kind of backup to the police on the rivers?
So we already took part in disaster relief. We can take part in flood defense, and we are the division that took part in the rescue efforts at the Habliani disaster.
The main command bridge and the navigation bridge above. So what kind of instrumentation does a ship like this have to go about its business?
So, this is our secondary command post. If the weather conditions are bad, we can move down here, or if we are sailing through an area where it is reasonable to be in a sheltered place, we can move down here, we can navigate the ship from here. Normally, or in basic setup, we usually sail the ship from the upper steering position. Here in the lower steering position, we can find a depth gauge which can be seen here. This is a depth gauge and a built-in sonar with which we can even look for objects on the riverbed. And also there is a navigation radar in it which displays the objects on the water surface, the steering wheel with which we can steer from below, the rudder angle indicator which helps the helmsman by showing in which direction and at what degree we have our rudder angle. There is a traditional compass in it, and also a turning angle gauge, which is important during maneuvers because we need to see to which way the ship is heading and in which direction it starts to move, like sideways, or which way we are turning. Also, we find a lever directly to the engines, so there is no need for us to separately call down to the engine room and say on which engine we want what power, but we can directly control that from here. These displays are belonging to this, these little touchscreen displays, and here we can find our navigation lights. We can switch those from here, and also our radios, the navigation and the military radios, we can switch from here.
And how much of this is replicated one level up under for normal commanding in the open?
These instruments are all duplicated up on the main bridge, but our radar is not a fixed built-in unit, but we can take a screen upstairs and we can use it the same way, and there is no depth gauge up there.
So with this open bridge, is this where the ship would normally be commanded, or is this only used in certain circumstances?
This is what we use 99% of the time if we are sailing at night. This is complemented with a radar display, and we can also bring up an AIS system, a ship tracking system, which we have in a mobile format here. We can switch it on and off. With that, we can identify the other ships near to us.
Well, what is the significance of the pennant? Because obviously this isn't the Hungarian flag, so what does the pennant signify?
That is the pennant of a higher ranking officer. If there is a higher ranking officer sailing with the unit, so a higher rating person than the commander of the ship, who also has naval qualification and is traveling with us on the ship, for example, the lieutenant colonel and also the colonel who was out here today. From that point, we have to hoist this pennant, and if we are in formation, then this will be the flagship, because the ship that bears the higher rank automatically is assumed to be the flagship. So we can find the quad barrel air defense gun on the bow deck, and here on the engine room deck are two single barrel air defense guns which are used against low flying airplanes, so aircraft flying no faster than 300 meters per second, which is roughly equal to 1,000 or 1,100 kilometers per hour, and also can be used against lightly armored transport vehicles, against smaller ships, and also against land targets. There is a 60 round cartridge on it, the same way as in the guns on the front. It rate of fire is also 650 to 750 rounds per minute.
What is the general purpose of the flotilla? Is it in terms of, you know, is it river security, intercepting helicopters, or removal of ordnance? What's the main goal?
It is self-defense and also the air defense of another ship. So if we have to escort the passage of another highly important ship, then we can provide the air defense for that within the effective gun range.
And the main job of all the ships overall is primarily dealing with unexploded ordnance, is that correct?
To keep secure the navigable rivers of Hungary from a navigational point of view. So hoisting the old unexploded Second World War ordnance to the deck and working together with our bomb disposal colleagues, the diffusing and transportation of that ordnance. Also the defense of the high-value objects which are close to the Danube shore or to our navigable waters and where we can sail near it with the ship. So here I mean of bridges, even the nuclear power station, so the air defense of these.
Roughly how much longer will this ship, do you think, stay in service? Or when will it be, when is it due for replacement?
that we don't know yet. But hopefully this ship will be in service for a long time to come. We are constantly upgrading it. We keep track of the requirements of the modern age. We receive new systems, newer radars, incrementally new engines. The current ones maybe need replacing now. Or there, if there is something more advanced, we keep those systems updated.
Just briefly, if you could tell us who you are and what your rank of duty is.
I am Staff Sergeant Tomas Hazai, the Chief Helmsman of the ship 31.
So we're down here in the engine room at the back end of the ship. It's got two very visible engines, but we're now going to talk to the man in charge of the machinery to find out a bit more about it. So could you just let us know who you are, what your rank is?
Sergeant First Class Janosz Bank, Chief Engineer, Non-Commissioned Officer at the Naval Department.
What is the ship powered by? What are we looking at in terms of machinery?
The AM-type minesweeper ship is powered by two V-12 diesels. Both main engines are 90,000cc piston displacement types. Their purpose is the propulsion of the ship. Alongside them, we can also find an auxiliary engine. This is responsible for the electricity generation for the ship when underway. It is also a diesel engine of 6,500cc.
It's quite warm in here, even though we're stationary and the engines are off, although we've just come back in. How warm does it get down here when the engines are going and you're out in the river?
Well, in the highest warm summer, it can reach 50 to 55 degrees Celsius as inside temperature, when the outside air temperature is, let's say, around 32 to 33 degrees Celsius.
Roughly how fast can these engines drive the ship?
Our top speed downstream, it is 24 to 25 kilometers per hour. Upstream, the ship can do 19 to 20 kilometers per hour.
Obviously, you mentioned these are diesel engines. How easy are they to maintain? Do they stay running most of the time, or do they take a lot of work to keep going?
The ship itself is from 1980s era, and the engines are as well. We are still able to supply them with equipment and parts and material. They will run as long as there is regular maintenance.
And how large is the engineering crew?
The crew of the engine room is four people, one non-commissioned officer, who is the engine maintenance chief, and three rank and file ratings as engineers.
So, obviously this ship has been around for a little while. Are there any specific operations that you've done aboard her that stand out or particularly noteworthy?
Alapvetően ugye a hadihajós katonáknak az elsődleges feladata, hogy a vízi tűzszerész műveleteket támogassák. Évente 2000, nagyságrendire 2000 rendőrségi bejelentés érkezik a Magyar Honvédség tűzszerész ügyeletére.
So on a fundamental basis, the primary task of the naval sailors is to support the riverine bomb disposal operations. Annually, there are about 2,000 calls received via the police to the Army's on-duty bomb disposal unit in connection with Second World War unexploded ordnance. A portion of these are turned up in our river waters. In this case, of course, the given spot needs to be approached carefully, and if it's really in such a bad spot, like the explosive ordnance is laying in the Danube's main riverbed, then the deployment of bomb disposal divers is needed. For the bomb disposal divers, the naval sailors provide the platform. So they are the ones who support the bomb disposal divers' operations. They are the ones who lift out these already prepared explosives with the ship's special crane. Then, following the defusing, they transport the explosives from the scene. The last time we did this was last year when a 1,000-pound American airdropped bomb turned up in the refueling bay on Chappelle Island. A dredging vessel lifted it out during dredging. Actually, they did not notice at the time. Only later they realized that they are dealing with a presumed explosive device. This ship went to the scene back then as well, and following defusing with the help of our crane, they lifted over the body of the bomb from the dredger ship with the fuse already removed and transported it away from the scene. Before that incident, this type of ship and smaller bomb disposal patrol boats have been deployed countless times, for example, during the preparation work for the refurbishment of the chain bridge in Budapest. For a long time, I mean for months, the bomb disposal divers were constantly diving. They wear finding the various type of ordnance resting in the vicinity of the chain bridge on the riverbed, such as artillery shells, handheld, armor-piercing rockets, other ammunition, and also airdropped bombs. These were raised by the bomb disposal patrol boats with the assistance of our sailors.
So what was the biggest operation that the ships have been part of?
Az egyik legkomolyabb művelet ugye 2019 márciusában történt meg, ekkor kettő GP vagy GP 2000-es típusú amerikai légibomba került elő a Duna.
One of the most serious incidents happened in March of 2019. This is when two American GP 2000-pound air dropped bombs turned up in the Danube's riverbed in the section at Budafok. One was close to the shore, the other one was positioned much further away in the riverbed. For the raising of these air-dropped bombs, we needed to deploy two of this type of minesweeper ship. One of them was sticking close to the shore and positioned herself over the bomb closer to the bank and the other one to further out. This was a fairly complex operation. The bomb disposal divers had to create attachment points on the airdropped bombs because the original attachment points were no longer usable. Following that, they secured the bombs to the naval ship's special crane, which has a one-ton lifting capacity. Both devices came out of the riverbed nicely one after the other. Then they raised them out of the water. The bomb disposal servicemen arriving to the scene diffused the explosive devices and disposed of the live fuses, which were found to be active. Then the explosive devices were transported away from the scene by water. For the duration of the bomb disposal operations, a 1 kilometer radius of the affected surrounding area had to be closed down. Practically thousands of people had to leave their homes. Obviously in the interest of their own safety.
Elhagynia az otthonát, nyilván a saját biztonságuk érdekében.
And just quickly, could you tell us what your name and rank is that you'd like us to credit you as?
Yeah. Milan Gajdos, First Lieutenant, PAO, Public Affairs Officer.
Okay, thank you.
So there you go, and if you'd like to see the anti-aircraft drill, the fire safety drill, and the man overboard drill that we did and recorded with various cameras, including a drone, well, tune in a few weeks' time, maybe a month or so, when we do the second part of this video, because between now and then, we've got to do the second part of the Antony roll. See you then.